Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, August 31st, 2001. In the fireside room this afternoon is Norm Day. Today's session number is DAN 2001-04, and it's titled Cleanup Strategies for Other Minds. Let's listen in.
Forest Service out of Wenatchee, Washington, and I'm the project manager for the cleanup effort that's going on right now for the Holden Mine. And I've been here all week doing these lessons or presentations on the Holden Mine. And this is the last in the series of four on the Holden Mine. So you've missed a lot of stuff ahead of this, but I think this is a pretty good story all by itself. But we are involved, the Forest Service, EPA, and the Washington Department of Ecology are cooperating agencies, overseeing the cleanup of the Holden Mine, and it's being done under the authority of the Superfund Act. This is not a Superfund site, but it's being done under that Superfund authority. And the mining company, the Howe Sound Mining Company that mined this particular deposit is long gone, but their successor company called Intalco is doing the environmental and engineering study of the mine. They've been working for the past 3.5 years on characterizing the impacts of the mine, and we're starting to get at the part of the project that will identify alternatives for cleaning up the site. And we're just kind of into that process now. But as a part of getting a better handle on the types of alternatives that we might consider in the remediation of this site, We needed to get access to the mine, to the inside of the mine last year. And the last presentation I did was the whole process that it took us 3 months to get through the cave part of the mine had been caved and essentially inaccessible, or at least most of the mine had been inaccessible for about 25 years. There were a couple other openings into the mine higher on the hillside, way above the main portal, that people had been getting into the mine over the years, and we've now put bars over that so people can't get in, but they have locks on them so we can get in when we need to gather some environmental data. But last year, the purpose of our getting into the mine was to collect a variety of information about how the water moves through the mine. And as some of you have mentioned, you've already been up to the main portal where the water's coming out. There's a considerable amount of air coming out there too. It's natural air conditioning. The mine is flooded from that point down about 1,000 feet. We also have water coming in as groundwater and fractures and that in the hillside. So there's a steady stream of water coming through there. And the water that comes out at the bottom is contaminated with some heavy metals. So what we tried to do by getting access to the mine was to see if there's some way we could either stop some of the clean water from coming into the mine, or maybe there's some way we could divert the clean water from dirty water before it comes in contact with one another, and that would allow us to it would perhaps make the treatment of the water easier and less expensive.
Now, does any of that contaminated water from the mine flow into Railroad Creek?
Yes, it does. It flows directly into Railroad Creek. Okay. And then we also have a different kind of contaminated water flowing out from underneath the tailings piles.
Okay.
And seeping into Railroad Creek. Okay. And that water is acidic, and it has a lot of iron, which is the rust color you see, see in all the rocks. So I don't have time to tell you the whole story about the cleanup, but I wanted to at least kind of set the stage to let you know why we needed to get access to the mine. We were able to get into the three different levels of the mine. The 300 level, which is highest on the hillside, and that level is approximately, well, from the village, it's about 1,300 to 1,400 feet up on the hillside above us. And then we went into the 1,100 level, and then the 1,500 level is the main portal. Out here where all the ore came out when it went into the mill. And the designation of the levels came about is the point on the hillside up here where the ore body crops out on the surface, the discovery point, the highest place on the hillside is called Zero Point, and then they just numbered all their levels down from that. So the 1,500 foot level is 1,500 feet down from the discovery point. Okay, so what I'm going to show you today is just a kind of a picture show of our efforts to get into the mine and traveling around underground in the various levels, show you what it looks like today, and where I could find pictures, historical pictures, from when the mine was operating. I'll show you those too so you can see what it looks like now and what it looked like back in the 40s or 50s.
Norm, do you want the lights on?
Yes, please, off. All right, there we go. I'm not sure how easily you can see this, but this is a planimetric map showing the different openings. These are the different openings, these X's. Those are portals or tunnels into the hillside. This is the 300 level right here. And this little area right here is a waste dump. And when they were putting this in, the rock that was in the way, that was not ore grade, was just dumped onto the surface. You then have the 550 level, which is the highest level you can easily walk to if you take the Honeymoon Heights Trail. There are places where the trail is steep, but you walk right up to this dump here and you get a nice view overlooking the village. You can scramble up the hillside and eventually get up here to the 300 point, but I wouldn't recommend it unless you've got good boots and are familiar with hiking around in the hillsides, because it's pretty steep and rocky and a lot of brush. Then there's a 700 level. And coming on down the hillside, there's an 800. This line right here is the trail. Okay. That's the 1100 level. And here's the Honeymoon Heights area. Mm-hmm. And then the 1500 level main portal is right here. Mm-hmm. This is the mill building. And these areas right here are the two big waste dumps up there. Mm-hmm. There is another portal on the 1500 level right over here. It's called the 1500 ventilator portal. And they never hauled any ore or anything out of there, but they set up big fans. And that's where they pumped air into the mine, or provided ventilation for the mine when it was operating. Okay, so we're going to first go into the 300 level. And the 300, the 550, the 800, and the 1100 were some of the very first portals that were put into the mine when Holden discovered this mine back in 1896. And so over the first 30 so years after Holden discovered the ore body, all the work was up here on the mountainside, trying to dig into the ore body. When they did put in the 1500 level, they put that in the year or a couple years before the mine was into production, when Howe Sound owned it. And what they did, this particular level goes all the way back into the mountainside to body in here where the ore body is. So it goes through 1,800 feet of non-mineralized rock. Okay, let's. This is a cross section through the mine, and it shows the different levels. Each of these horizontal lines are different levels in the mine. This is the 300, the highest level on the mine, and right. There's the 1100 level. We'll go into that one. Of course, this is the 1500 level. These shaded areas are some of the stopes where they mine the ore out. And these are huge rooms inside the mine, were anywhere from 75 to 100 feet in width, which was the width of the ore body. And some of them some of the bigger ones are like almost 500 feet in height, and 500 feet or longer in length along the ore body. So they're huge rooms, just like a large cave. And this is where they removed all the ore. They took them through these draw points, and I'll show you some pictures of what these draw points look like. The ore would drop through these like shafts in the bedrock down to the 1500 level where they were hauled out on the ore cars. Everything below, there was a shaft also, you can see it right here, that connected these upper levels of the mine But that only they only use that shaft to haul men and equipment. The shaft that connected all the lower levels was much larger, and they use that to not only to haul men and equipment, but also the ore came up that shaft. The dark areas here are these stopes that were backfilled with tailings. They put about, there's approximately 8.5 million tons of tailings on the surface out here, and 1.5 million tons were put back into the mine in these stopes here. The whole, and this goes down about 1,000 feet, and all of this is flooded. Okay, this is a mine map, or like a road map for the 300 level. And right here is the portal where you would come in, and the geologist would put on these maps the geology, and also indicate the grade of the ore minerals. And it's kind of impressive when you look at it, but it's not nearly as extensive as any of the other levels. The most dangerous part of this mine is this right here. It's called a winze, and I'll show you a picture of it. And it's like a shaft, but it's inclined at an angle, and it connects the 300 level with the levels below. And if you remember on that other picture, it actually goes right into the top of that big stope. So if you were to fall down this winze, you would probably end up eventually someday on the 1500 level.
Yeah.
Long ways. Okay, this is the entry. This is how you crawl down through this hole to get into the portal. And this is just a view. You notice in these upper workings that have been there since the turn of the century, you see a lot of colors on the walls of the mine. And that's because the ore is a sulfide-rich ore, and that oxidizes to air and humidity and water, and it produces a whole variety of secondary minerals that I can't even, a lot of them I can't even pronounce, but they're the weathering products of the sulfide minerals. Now here's an old air door that was standing right in here, and it's just rotten. Here's another picture of the 300 level. This is the winze right here, and you can, this picture is looking down that winze. And you could throw rocks down there, and you can hear them rolling for a long time. But again, you can just see the color on the wall here is really indicative of how long that's been exposed to the elements. And these openings are much narrower than you'll see on the 1500 level, where it was a full-scale level where they haul the ore out.
Is this level wet? A lot of water dripping.
Not a lot here, but at times there is water. Matter of fact, you can see that in the early spring when the snow melts, actually water flows down in that winze and drops down into the other part of the mine. Here's some pictures from the 300 level taken back around the turn of the century. And here's the ore car. They didn't have the Holden mine when it was in production was all electric. And all the trains were electric powered, but here it was hand power. They'd push the ore cars in and out and load the ore cars by shovel, and all the drill holes were drilled by hand with the star drill bit and the double jack. Here's a picture of the miners working on that winze you saw. Here's a bucket and cable, and they would lower that down and then they would fill that bucket up with muck and bring it up here and put it in this ore car, which is like this one, and hauled out to the portal and dump it in the waste dump. And when I say muck, that's a kind of a mining term for the broken ore that's after they've blasted it, and you hear them called muckers, and there's a mucking machine. This is a machine that would muck up or pick up the ore and place it in these carts. Also, you notice their source of light?
Candles.
They didn't have, in these days, they didn't have the hard hats and mine lamps and stuff like they did by the time the mine started into production. These were hardworking miners for sure.
About what year was that?
At about the turn of the century, around 1900.
They didn't have to worry about any gases.
No, not here, but we...
Not granite, I guess, yeah.
Well, they don't have to worry, they didn't have to worry about, you know, any of your combustible gases.
Yeah.
But they would have needed to worry about lack of oxygen, and which is not, hasn't been a problem so far. We have gas meters with us to tell us if we're getting in unsafe conditions, but we've never found any problems with air in the mine. And there's always a possibility when you have a lot of timber in the mine, when the mine was operating, you could have had a fire and that would have produced carbon monoxide. Today it's the air seems to be pretty good because there's pretty good airflow through the mine, as you've witnessed if you've been up to that mine entry right now. There's quite a breeze blowing out of there. Anyway, this was a bulkhead back on the 300 level, and we think they used it. There's water backed up behind here. We think they used that to store water during the mining days for their drilling equipment. This is just another one of the workings up there in the 300 level, one of the little cross cuts. Here's some real interesting, this again on the 300 level, and these little stalactites, iron-rich stalactites, are forming in there from this the dripping of the water, picking up this iron and forming, you know, this one right here, see how long this one is? It's about, maybe 8 inches long. Okay, other than the winds, there wasn't a real lot of interest on there. Maybe those stalactites are kind of neat, but this is the 1500 level, or excuse me, the 1100 level. And again, here's the portal. And there's some interesting features that I'll show you. I think first we're going to look at some places where they actually hand-stacked waste. Instead of hauling it all the way out to the portal and dumping it in the waste dump, they actually stack it right in the mine. Right in here, it's maybe hard to see, the two shafts are actually, there are two drifts that are parallel to one another. And in this area is where they had a series of draw points, and I'll show you pictures of it, where they dropped the ore down from stopes above, and they came down these big chutes and dropped down to the 1100 level, and then they had a machine called a slusher that would scrape all that rock into another hole or winds, and it would drop all the way down to the 1500 level where they would then load it into cars. Right in here is a big stope that I'll show you some pictures of. And then right here is the number one shaft, and we'll go back here and take a look at it. We were not able to go any farther than right in here because of unsafe conditions in the mine. Okay, this is the entryway to the 1100. It's a little more difficult. At one time, this whole area was open, and there was this door, and you could just, use the door to get in. But over the years, soil debris has kind of come down over the front of that, and so you have to climb down through this hole. And then once you climb through this hole, you got to claw through that hole in the door. And so you can see some of the gates. These are the bat gates or bars we put in to allow bats to continue going in and out, but not people, because we have the gates are locking. Anyway, this is difficult enough, but in the spring, when we were up there sampling this spring, the water level was right up to here. And so we had to not only drop through that hole, we went immediately right into water. Of course, we were prepared for it. We had chest waders, insulated chest waders, and all that stuff. But even with those insulated chest waders, that water was, it must have been pretty close to freezing because it was sure cold. And you can see the white marks up here are lines, a high water mark. And this is another view looking right down the drift. You notice the bedrock is steeply dipping. There used to be a rail line here, but they took the track out once they developed the number one shaft. You can spend hours just looking at the geology along these walls if you... Okay, here's a picture of one of the cross cuts, and this is where they'd hand stacked this waste rock. For some reason, They didn't want to haul it out of the mine, or there was a possibility that it was close to ore grade, and they didn't want to put it in the waste dump. They stored it there for some future time when they would run it through the mill. This right here is the winds on the 1100 level that drops all the way down to the 1500 level where it would, the ore would then be loaded in cars. And I'll show you some of these ore chutes later, but this is one of the kind of a draw point, or not a draw point, but the winds, and there was a grizzly over it, or, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with grizzlies, but they're bars that are placed over the hole to help size the material. The real big rocks wouldn't go through this grizzly, or it's a large screen, and they would have to bust them up with rock hammers or explosives. But they had a slusher that would set up, and would, this is the drift where the slusher drift, and this slusher would scrape the ore that came out of these draw points down to this point, and it would fall down to the 1500 level. And this is a picture of one of the slushers, and you can see this is a someone standing next to it. It was probably six to eight feet across here, very heavy, and these things would drag with this on the floor, and there was a big loop up here that was attached to a cable, and they would just drag that, and that would pull all the ore and then go down the winds. Here is one of the draw points, and I'll show you the outline of it. And the reason, this is a big boulder that's stuck in it. And it's about the size of a car. So that's why you can't really see the holes, because there's something stuck in it. And what they would have done during the mining days, obviously what they try to do is, with their explosives, they try to break rocks up smaller than that. But when they got one that size, or smaller, but still plugged up the hole, they have these guys that would go out there with long sticks with dynamite tied to it, and they'd stick it up there next to the rock and then touch it off, and it would break the rock up, hopefully. And I mean, they wouldn't be hanging on to the stick. I mean, they would just put it up there. Or in a case one this big, they probably would have to drill it and then blast it. But there were about four of these draw points along this drift, and two of them were open, and you can look up in there, and two of them had boulders stuck in them. This coloration, this material here, is again is a weathering product of the copper ore. And again, I'm not sure, it's some kind of probably a copper sulfate that's oozing out of the mine, out of the, where the water's coming in contact with the ore that's still up there, it's picking up the ore minerals. Here's an old dynamite box. Okay, this is a picture of what the slusher would have looked like when it was operating. Here's the slusher, you know, the right way up, and there is where the cable is attached to it. And this device right here is the is kind of like where a motor is. It's run off of compressed air, and it would reel up the cable and pull this slusher to this point right here. This is where the ore would drop, and then the other cable would take it back, and then it would start all over again. And here's another view of the slusher motor right here. This looks like it could have been right there in the 1100 level, right where we were set up, because you could still see the concrete pad that the motor was on and the big bolts that they had it screwed down to. Here's another view in the 1100 level, kind of trying to decide which way we were going to go here. And there's an ore cart, or this wasn't an ore cart, the cart they probably hauled timbers on. And we started moving it. I thought for sure that being in this water, it had been rusted shut, but the wheels worked darn good. Matter of fact, I found out, I have some, a lot of these pictures are on our internet site webpage at the forest, and people have been looking at them, and someone that had been into the mine back in the 70s when he was on staff here as a kid. Shouldn't have been into the mine, because it's always been a policy that you can't go into the mine, but that didn't stop these kids. But found out that, of course, they went up there without mining equipment. They didn't have hard-toed boots, they didn't have hard hats or mine lamps, just flashlights and maybe a plastic bag that they use as a raincoat, and there they go. And what they did, I found out that they would use the mine cart to get through the water because they didn't have boots. So the last time we were up there last week with some bat biologists, one of the bat biologists, they had steel-toed boots, but they didn't have rubber boots. And this water would have been over the top of the boots, so we used that principle. And it reminded me just of an Indiana Jones movie, is what it reminded me of. This, again, is on 1100 level. This is an old powder magazine where they stored their explosives, and of course the wood is just rotten, and there's no powder left in there. They removed it all, but we went back in there and we found a couple pieces of paper which were there, kind of like a bill lading that showed you the how much dynamite and what percentage nitroglycerin it was and stuff like that. And we set those right on, this is a workbench right outside where they probably would have put their charges together and their fuses together, and so we laid those right out there. This is back looking up a raise, which is opposite from a winds. The winds goes down and the raise goes up. Okay. And this guy here is looking up the raise. Right here is a chute where they would have also loaded ore. You see a ladder, so you would they could walk between levels on the ladder. And then there's some boards here that are laying on an angle, and they would use that to haul equipment up and down. And right here, they do this. This is a skip, and they would have a cable attached to that, and they could haul stuff up between the levels there. And then right here is where they drop ore down on an ore chute, and they run the ore car right up to this point and load it up and take off. Of course, this wood is all rotten, and really, you know, we didn't climb any of these ladders because they're very unsafe. Not unlike some of the people did in the 70s. Yeah. This is just a drill hole that is just spewing iron minerals that are forming, precipitating right here on the wall of the mine. So another area where we had this rock stacked up. In this case, it wasn't hand stacked. It was probably pushed in there with those slushers as a way to store it. This was as far as we went in the mine, just beyond where this picture was taken. It gets to be just about 18 inches of two feet between the top of the drift here, what they, in mining terminology, is called the back. You would have to crawl on your hands and knees through this, and we said, "Now that's as far as we need to go."
How far does it extend? According to the old,
we're back the number one shaft on the 200 level. Excuse me, on the 1100 level, which I'll show you a picture of in a minute, is 2,134 feet from the portal.
Oh.
So that's how far back. That's the furthest we went back. Oh, by the time you walk that, you know, and walk all the drifts and everything, you walk a couple miles. And for those of you who didn't know, there are about 57, 58 miles of underground workings in that mountainside.
Did you know what they looked like before you went in?
Yeah, we had the mine maps that were produced from the mining days, and that helped quite a bit. Here is a picture taken during when the mine was active of one of these areas where they had waste piled up. And it could have been just the picture right before it, I don't know, but it looked somewhat similar. This is one of the stopes on the 1100 level. This was the only stope that we were able to look into safely. Of course, this is looking into it right here. Mm-hmm. And if you look straight across, you see this area right here? That's the continuation of this crosscut that I'm standing in. But it's been all blasted away because it went right through ore. That's how they made these large stopes. They they had these drifts. I mean, before this stope was here, this was rock all around it. And they would drill every so many feet along this crosscut, they would drill holes in kind of a fan pattern down. And they would load that with explosives all along, and then they would have multiple crosscuts through the ore body at this particular level. And then they would touch that off, and all the ore would drop to the bottom and go through draw points. And they would just move up to the next level and drive a crosscut across and do the same thing over again. But this right over here is a continuation of where we were standing, or where I'm standing right now.
And that's 100 feet away?
At least 100 feet. And we threw some rocks over, like any kid or geologist does. And it was, from the time the rock left our hand to the time it hit something below us, 5 seconds. This is a picture of what it would have looked like, the slope looked like when the mine was in production. Here you can see he's looking into the hole, and there's the guy standing over in the crosscut across. You can see this is probably 75 to 100 feet across, and the ore body is steeply dipping, and this could, you know, this is probably several hundred feet depth. This is the number one shaft on the 1100 level, and you notice all the green colors in here. That's that this wood has been preserved by copper. That it's been dripping copper for 40 some years, almost 50 years, and has preserved that wood. This was the only place where we found wood that's still pretty good shape because it's been preserved. But we did not go up or down the ladder. And for your information, people that have been going into the mine over the years before we blocked it off, some of the more well-organized expeditions came in and put their names on here and then indicated all the levels they went to in the mine. Mm-hmm. And the only way they could get to it was by going up and down these ladders, hundreds of feet. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to explain how dangerous that is, even when they were doing it back in the 70s and 80s. But today, you know, it would be suicide if you were to attempt it now, because the wood is just, while it may be real good right here because it's got copper in it, you don't have to go very far before you'd be dealing with rotten rungs. And some might look real good, and you get part way up and then you go. And as I said, this was only used for men in equipment, this level, this shaft. And this shaft went from about probably a 700 or 550 level down to the 1500 level. And this is a view looking down it when we were here in it. This is a view looking down when it was mine was operating. And these little drops right here is water. It looks like rain, but that every time I've been into the number one shaft, and I've been there different times a year, it looks like it's raining. Mm. Of course, water is coming in from upper levels and flowing right down the shaft. Okay, now we're going to go on to the 1500 level. And this one is, I'm going to kind of have to set the story a little bit, because entry into the 1500 level is unlike anything I've ever done before. When we were, right here's the portal, and you go back about 1,800 feet to get back to where the ore zone is, and this is some of the stopes. The tunnel continues on this way, it makes a bend and comes out at the ventilator portal that I told you where they had the ventilation. This is caved. All of this material in here is glacial till, and it's caved, so you can't get in that way. The portal here was caved last year. The first 90 feet was caved because it's in glacial till, and it was caved until we repaired it last summer. However, we weren't able to complete entry into the mine all the way back to here with the mine equipment that we used last year, because we ran into a problem with the settling pond filling up, and we had to shut down operations before we could complete it. So we ended up with using the mine to settle out some of this precipitate in the water. Otherwise, it would be just be flowing into Railroad Creek. The mine, when we got in there, and I'll show you a picture here in a second, had up to 4 feet, 4.5 feet of what I call slime, but it was iron-rich precipitate. And it's just goo. And we had to put these bulkheads in to dam up the water to make little lakes inside the mine to settle off this material. Well, now that we have these bulkheads in, and you got water backed up behind them, the only way we get in now is by boat. So we have to take a flat bottom boat, and we sail down the portal. There's about 400 feet between the first two bulkheads, and then we go up over the second bulkhead, which is about 5 feet deep, and then we go another 1,000 feet before we run out of water. And the tunnel is sloped outward, and they put it that way so the water would naturally flow out of the mine. So eventually, you know, you go back far enough and you eventually run out of water. And we would use the flat bottom boat, and we had a rope strung in there we'd use to pull ourselves in. And again, because of safety problems, we were able to get to the number one shaft. We were able to get back to this point and kind of look into this stove. And we were able to get around to the number two shaft, but we weren't able to go much further than right in here. And so we haven't seen any of this part of the mine yet. And this particular drift goes another 8,000 feet this way, out under Copper Basin. So there's a lot of mine we haven't seen yet, and there's a lot of mine we're going to need to look at before we complete the cleanup. But right now, it's just not safe to get into it. And either next year or the year after, the mining company's going to come back out, or the company that's responsible, and they have a mining contracting company working for them, they're going to have to come back in and get access to some of these areas so we can complete the work we need to finish up the feasibility study.
You said you went out to Copper Basin?
Yeah, it goes out under Copper Basin, 8,000 feet from this point. Mm. And I don't know how far that would take it. It would go out under Copper Basin and into under Buckskin. It was done toward the latter years of the mine in an attempt to find more ore. And they drifted it out there, and they drilled holes looking for more ore, and they never found anything. Okay, now this picture shows you what it was like when we first broke through this collapsed part of the mine and repaired it. And this is we had a little berm build up so this stuff wouldn't flow out. But this is 4.5 feet deep. I call it slime, but the technical name is it's an iron and aluminum. It's iron aluminum precipitate. Hydrosilicate. And this gentleman right here is probably about 6'5", 6'6", and his feet are not touching the floor of this mine. This gook is actually suspending him just like quicksand. And this is the main portal, and it was where, you know, they haul all the ore out, so it's a much larger opening. It's probably 10 feet high here and 12 feet across, so it's much bigger than the other openings. Here you can see these lines here are not bedding in the rocks. Those are the high water mark for the slime and the water that was in here. This guy here is walking on top of some of these timbers. That's why he's standing up. This picture made the front page of What Actually World when we kind of had an interview by the paper here last fall, and they put a couple of pictures in the paper and had a front page story. Took up more space than the inauguration of President Bush. And this was a front page. Anyway, there's yours truly in front of the portal as it looked last November, just after we finished all of our finished our mine entry work and sampling. And we've got, of course, we had them reconstruct this to make it look somewhat like it did before we had to dismantle it. And they put some trinkets they found in the mine on there. And we have some metal doors in here now that are locked, keep people from going in and out. course, there's about a foot or so between here and the water, and there's quite a breeze that blows out of there in the summer. In the winter, it goes in. And this blue plastic tarp is sucked up right against that door, and you really have to work on it to pull it away from the door.
Why does it reverse?
Well, because the air is a little bit warmer at this level, and it goes to the mine and rises. Warm air rises to the mine, whereas now you have cold air sinking and coming out the bottom. Now, this is what it looked like when the mine was in production, the main portal, kind of a winter picture also. Of course, here we are in our little boat ride to get back into the mine. It's here we are, kind of, this is the first bulkhead. This is looking out. This is the first bulkhead, and then we kind of sail up to the second one, and we got to lift our boat over it, just portage it over and continue. And here's a view of the first air doors you would have encountered as you were going into the mine when it was in production. These big air doors are all rotten and gone now, but that's what they would look like. And here's a view at the far end of the drift when you got back to where the ore zone was. And drift west was the drift would have gone west and eventually connect with the ventilator portal that I showed you. Mm-hmm. And the other direction would have gone back into some of the big stopes. And here's now we're beyond where the water stopped, and this is our sampling crew taking samples of the different water, and this was the first junction. This goes over to the number one shaft. Everything you touch in there has got all this precipitate on the floor. Here it's not real thick, but it's over everything, and you just get filthy back there. And that here's another interesting thing we came across. Looks like soap suds. It's I call it scum, but it's a bacteria that's growing and feeding off of the acid water that has a lot of sulfur on it. So
you can see that coming out of the mine.
No, not this.
Well, we've seen something like
what
this.
You see, the white stuff you see out of the mine is aluminum precipitate.
Oh.
And once you you probably are getting some of the bacteria coming out in the mine water, but I've never seen any of this come out. There's all kinds of things, you know, kind of bacteria growing that use the sulfides for food. Anyway, we thought that this might, if there was any horror story writers, this might be a good story for scum that took over Holden. You just see pictures of this stuff coming out the mine and creeping down here in the village. Yeah, you have an imagination. Okay, this is the number one shaft on the 1500 level. You notice the timbers are in much different condition. Real rotten. We couldn't really get in close to this because it was a little bit too dangerous. You know, they're so rotten that if you touched them and knocked them over, they could, you know, dislodge rocks or other timbers. This was a little room near the number one shaft where they probably stored equipment and things like that. There's a little staircase you'd walk up to get to that. This is just another view further into the mine. Now again, notice how wide this is, and the trains, the electric trains, had used overhead electrical wires to run on, just like a trolley does. And again, you can see this a lot of this precipitate everywhere. We kind of dedicate our clothes and our gear to the mine. When we go in the mine, we use the same gear that's orangish, and when we wash our clothes, we don't wash them at home, we wash them at the laundromat.
Okay.
Which one's
one? The laundromat.
How many laundromats have you been banished?
You know, I've had to move over to East Wenatchee now. This is looking back into that one stope that I told you about. Actually, we're not looking into the stope, but this concrete area right here is the door. There was a door here, and you go beyond this door, and you're into the bottom of that stope, and it's extremely dangerous because rocks are falling all the time from the stope. So we didn't go any farther than that door right there. And then there's a parallel drift that goes off this direction that would have gone around the stope so that people could have worked around. And we went a little bit farther than this, but very carefully, but this was an extremely dangerous area. And we've only gone back a couple people at a time and only for a real reason. But you can see all the rocks and timbers that have fallen, these big boulders that have fallen off the rock. You see these metal things here that were like rock bolts that held the rock in. You can see some of them just hanging, the rocks. It wouldn't take much to dislodge them. So again, this is an area that would have to be repaired before we go any further. Now here's a view of that same stope I just showed you a picture of. This is what it looked like when in the mining days. And here's a miner down here at the bottom. And you can see how far up it goes and how wide it is. But it looks like there's pools of water here. Well, there was. Actually, this was one of the stopes that was backfilled with tailings up to the 1500 level. So this stope actually continued down below the 1500 level, but they backfilled it with tailings. And so that's what makes it look so nice and flat, and that's what the water looks like there. You can see what they say right here. This is sand filled or tailings. Here's another view of that area, and it shows you some of the rocks are just hanging up there, and it's really extremely dangerous. Right here is one of these ore chutes on the 1500. Ore would have come down and you would have loaded it onto the ore cars. This is looking into the number two shaft. This was a much bigger shaft than the one because you had to haul men and equipment down. And again, you have a lot of timbers that are dislodged and kind of hanging. We were able to walk along the side here and get back into the shaft area where the shaft was. And this is kind of what it looked like. You see they actually had metal beams in here, because this was an area where a lot of activity was occurring all the time. But again, there's still a lot of stuff that's fallen down. Also notice these marks up here. Again, the high water mark. At one point in time, the mine was totally sealed. It had collapsed and totally sealed. And this is probably when this high water mark was, because you're about 2,400 feet back from the portal in here. And it built up such a pressure that it just shot the plug out, and it took out part of, I think, one of the buildings up there and shot down across the road from the portal. Wow. And most of the debris was deposited in the area where the lagoon is now, which is kind of a lagoon right near where they have some heavy equipment on the bridge, the road bridge. You can see it across over there, and that's where we used that for a settling pond last summer. So, you know, after that burst out, it then again collapsed, and it had been collapsed again, but it was at least able to leak some water, so we knew it wasn't totally filled up. Okay, here's a view in that area right there when the mine was operating with one of the ore cars going by. This is what it would have looked like at that place when it was operating. Here's a current view of the number two shaft. Right here is the shaft. Right here, we're in the process of sampling water down in that shaft. We've taken a probe and put it down the shaft 100 feet or so, and we're taking water samples. So that's what we're doing. Now if you look at the next picture, you'll see what it looked like when the mine was operating. Right here is what this looked like when it was operating. And you can see the cage that the miners would have worked in. They had another cage below it that the ore was in. And this is the hoist. This is the hoist room for the number two shaft. And I'm going to show you a minute some pictures taken here in the hoist room when we were in here this year. That's what the hoist room looks like today. And again, we did not go into this area. We kind of looked into it, but we didn't actually walk into it. The white area here, these are all steel girders. Mm-hmm. And then they put boards, timbers in here to keep rocks from falling down on the workers. And the white is they would spray that or paint it with lime for fire, as a fire retardant. And even though it looks like these light bulbs are on, it's just a reflection of the flash. But when we first went into this area, when we were doing our safety inspection, we were kind of talking loudly, you know, saying, wow, this is neat. And some either rocks or something fell just from the vibration of our voice. So we figured that we didn't want to go in there. This is the area, again, this is a chute where the ore would have been loaded onto ore cars coming out of the number two shaft. What they did is that the shaft goes up 100 or feet or so above the level where the men got into it at, mm-hmm. and then you would drop the ore, would be dropped into chutes above that level, and then would come out here and be loaded into the ore cars. And again, you can see all of the down timber and rocks and everything. This is a point on which we didn't want to go. And this is a picture of what that area looked like when the mine was in operation, loading the ore car at that point. And it's all good mines when you're a half a mile back in the mountainside and you have to have a rest break. You don't want to walk all the way back out because it's an emergency. This is just kind of a view last November when we were finishing up our sampling up here. This kind of reminds me of Dr. Zhivago movie, one of the chalets here. Anyway, if any of you are interested in seeing more of these pictures or just getting information on the Holden Mine Cleanup Project, there's our forest webpage right there, and you can get on that and look for hot topics, and then you can find the Holden Cleanup Project. Unfortunately, I haven't been very good about updating the text material. It's still a little bit out of date. But all the pictures I just showed you plus more are on the webpage, so you can browse through that. If someone could turn the lights on, we can. We've got about 20 minutes before dinner, so I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. Yes.
Any guesstimates on how long once, of course, I know you haven't finished the feasibility study, but how long this project's going to be?
Well, we've been, we actively started this project in 97 with starting to collect the remedial data. We're guessing right now that we'll probably finish the feasibility study within the next two and a half years. And then we go through a process where we'll send a proposed plan out. Once we complete the feasibility study, then the company's involvement doesn't stop, but they're preparing the feasibility study. Then once they've done that, then the agencies prepare a proposed plan. In other words, we take the information that's in the feasibility study and come up with our proposed remedy. Now, it may be similar to what the company is proposing as a preferred alternative. It may be a combination of a variety of alternatives, or maybe something somewhat different. Whatever it is, we have to justify it, though.
Yeah.
And that goes in the proposed plan. That goes out for public review, and it'll be actually a formal public review process where we'll take comment at public hearings through a court stenographer, and then we'll also take written comments, including comments from the company, of course, as well as the public, and take that, and then we prepare a response to the comments, and then prepare the record of decision, which is the final selection of the alternatives. And once we do that, then we have to go through a period of negotiation with the company to actually perform the remedy. So let's say this add another year to that.
Yeah.
So We're probably at a very minimum, or the best, the most optimistic time scale would say about 3 years out before we are at a point when we have a remedy that we're going to go with. Then the company will take that remedy and do the final engineering design, and then start construction. Now it probably will be a 2-year construction period. It could be a 3-year construction period if we go with one of the more aggressive alternatives. So you're looking, that's probably 5 years from now before we're, maybe 6 years before we have the remedies constructed.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know that you're a mine expert and you've worked other mines other than this one. My question is the technology that they used in this mine, is it only designed for this situation, or does some of this technology, has it been used in other mines?
I mean the mining method?
Yeah.
It has been used other places, but this mine was cutting edge for the time for that particular mining method, and the use of what they call long hole drilling to produce those big stopes. That's the only thing that made this mine, well, one of the things that made this mine profitable, because it was really an overall low grade copper mine. I mean, it produced copper or zinc with some gold and silver, but it was really low grade. The whole deposit only averaged 1.1% copper, which is low grade. And it was because of these bulk mining methods that they used here that helped make it. And they used gravity wherever they could. Everything above the 1500 level, ore was moved by gravity. And so that helped make it profitable.
Where did they get the engineers to design this?
Some came right out of school, probably the ones that really designed it were journeyman level engineers that worked for other mining companies. The company, Howe Sound Mining Company, had other mines that were in production. Oh, they used a lot of their mining experts. When the mine started up, a lot of the people who were coming out here, at least the mining engineers and geologists that would have worked in the mine, were fresh out of school and newly married, and here they arrive in Holden.
Yeah,
honeymoon heist. Yep.
You said you put a probe down shaft number two, and you went down about 100 feet water sample. Was there a difference in the water sample?
Yeah,
a different stratus.
Yes, so the water chemistry changed. You started getting a reducing water, or the water, the pH of the water went up above neutral as you went down with depth, which we were expecting because there's less oxygen down there. I'm trying to remember, there were some differences also in the metal content of the water as well as at depth. I can't give you the depth without looking, but and the temperature changed too. It got warmer as you went deeper in the mine, or deeper in down the shaft.
And how much more deeper does it go down?
1,000 feet.
Still 1,000 feet from 1,500.
From 1,500 level, yeah.
And you were just probing.
We only went down about 100 feet, yeah.
Or just about 100.
30 some meters.
Okay.
Well, that was as far as the cord went on the instrument.
Yeah.
And so that's the stuff that's percolating out, though.
Well, that's coming up, and then we have groundwater entering the mine from above is coming out. Uh-huh. And you know, if we can somehow separate the clean water from the dirty water and do some treatment inside the mine, maybe we can reduce the volume of water that needs to be treated once it gets out on the surface. Yeah.
Dave, was there any arsenic or selenium associated?
Yes, there is a little arsenic, a little selenium, there's a little lead. Actually, there was some galena in places in the mine, but they didn't recover any lead. And most of the ore minerals were not arsenic rich. I mean, they're just because this was a massive sulfide volcanogenic deposit, you get a little bit of arsenic, but it was not heavy in arsenic. And none of the I can't remember now what the selenium levels were, but selenium, arsenic, and lead, none of those were above water quality criteria for the state. I mean, they were elevated, but not above the water quality. The biggest metals, that heavy metals that are above water quality standards and seasonally, and you can find exceedances all the way down to Lake Chelan at certain times of the year. Cadmium, copper, and zinc.
Has this contributed to understanding the geology of the area?
The geology was pretty well understood. You know, there were a lot of people in the mine, mapped the mine when it was operating, and the theory on how the ore deposit was deposited, or how it was formed, has changed over the years. But the geology is, and over the years, as people have looked at it, they've concluded that not only is the ore body is steeply dipping, but it's actually completely overturned. It's upside down and steeply dipping. And initially, they didn't think it was, the concept of massive sulfide volcanogenic type deposits, that's probably a mouthful for most of you, but it's essentially where the ore deposit was formed on the ocean floor by these vents or fumaroles from volcanic activity. you've seen reports off the Pacific coast now, and that's how this deposit was originally formed. The metals coming up out of these fumaroles and then precipitating out on the bottom of the ocean.
Then it's lifted up in a vertical kind of.
Yeah, it went through all sorts of uplift, compression. It's metamorphosed. These rocks were originally sedimentary rocks with a lot of volcanic sediment in them, and then they've been metamorphosed now. They're metamorphic rocks, and they've been upturned, or been folded, faulted, and intruded with dikes of igneous rocks. And so it's kind of interesting to walk back here and look at some of the geology.
Is it true that there still is a fair amount of platinum in the tailings?
I don't know about platinum. I don't know that we even looked at platinum, but there is a fair amount of gold left in the tailings, but not enough to pay for any kind of mining. Matter of fact, we even for a while were considering the possibility of re-mining or reprocessing the tailings as a method of cleaning up the tailings, and it would have been. I've been more trouble than I was worried. And we've withdrawn the whole area from mineral entry now, so someone can't come in and locate mining claims and try to mine the tailings.
Were your pictures all digital?
Yes. Except for the ones
except the old ones.
The old mine, and that what I did, I took some slides that I have up in the museum that they show periodically, some slideshows up there, and I took the slides home and had them digitized.
Okay. How did you get
so they're not real high quality, but it kind of gives you a picture of what it was like.
Now, to get some of those, the stopes and the far shaft and stuff where you said, did you take extra lances so you could get that?
I tried that, and the pictures came out better when I just used the flash on the camera.
Is that right?
What I needed was a really strong light, mm-hmm. and backlight, and I didn't do that, but...
Well, some of those cavers and stuff they have.
Yeah, like, those cavers.
They brought these, located like that.
Well, we brought these bat people up here. They had all kinds of gear for stuff like that. But I now know where I can get a light that really lights things up. Though.
Who's
going to
pay for the cleanup?
The company that's responsible has been paying for all the work so far. Will pay for the remedy as well. Will be hope. We have to negotiate another consent decree with them when we get to that point, but they've already told us they're going to do it.
Is there a price for the operation so far, is the exploration?
To where we are right now, I really don't know. I could only guess. The company has, it's a little after 6, so the bell will ring at 6:15. The company... the Forest Service had about $6.2 million into this project when we started negotiating with the company. And we did some work back here, some reclamation work back in the late 80s, early 90s. We put gravel on the tailings and some riprap along the toe of the tailings. And then we did a lot of monitoring and other studies since then. And so the company was responsible for our past cost up here, too. And so they've already paid us $3.1 million for our past cost, plus they're paying for everything, including my salary and the salary of the people from EPA and Ecology that work on the project that are doing oversight. Plus we have a consultant, an environmental consultant that we have helping us overview or the documents prepared by the consultant that works with the company. So, you know, it adds up. You know, I'd just be guessing, but it's probably $2 or $3 million so far, in addition to the $3 million they've already paid us.
Yeah.
But don't quote me.
Sure.
Yeah. Please don't quote me.
Now, are those, the well that you had underneath the tailings and stuff like that, are they still being monitored or?
I think every once in a while they'll come out and monitor them, but I mean, most of the monitoring work was done in 97, 98.
Okay.
And then we had a lot of work done before that, because most of those wells we put in, Forest Service or Bureau of Mines put in, so we've got a lot of information before the company started here in 97, and they've incorporated everything into one. So I think they probably come in and download some of their data periodically. Before I forget, these last four presentations have been on the mine. I'm doing one more presentation tomorrow that is kind of totally different from mine related. It's on global warming and a favorite topic of mine, environmental ethics. So it's entirely different from this, but I'm looking forward to some. I don't want to do too much of the talking. I want to get a good discussion going among this group, so we'll see what happens.
What time is that?
That's at 10:45 here. So I don't know what else. I mean, there's a lot I could tell you about what we're doing in the cleanup project and everything else, but that could take hours. So. Okay. Aerial photograph here taken of the site that you might want to kind of, maybe if I get it out here out of the way, you can kind of take a look at it and get the whole bird's eye view of the site.
I think I brought your wife's crunchy on the floor in the bookshop, and I didn't charge because I didn't see it. So I hope you guys would have sold. If she still wants it, have her come back.
We'll
pay for it then.
Not a problem.
I saw, oh my gosh, here it is.
Oh, she's got a little bit of region six.
Oh, I didn't realize we had dropped it. So.
Did you get that website?
Put them on coasters and right lines of hope.
I'm not sure what opinion he has.
Oh, he doesn't need it.
Well, that comes right off the computer. Isn't that
I don't know, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have kept the lights on and it still would have been bright.
Right.
Huh.
They don't say on the cable over here.
Nah, it's lightweight.
See, there's
something lightweight.
That's the one that drove open.
Yeah.
I think this is the one you can see.
Well, thank you very much.
You want to install the building here? I want to just steel frame it. You still see it.
All right. Well, I heard quite a few of the Platinum family. So.
You have to walk all the way up here.
Is that right? I just don't remember much about the Platinum. I know there was a
right there. Here's the covered bridge.
Oh, okay.
We walk up that. We were just on the Wheels of Great program.
I kind of like playing with them too. I've done a number of these presentations. I kind of enjoy it. It's fun.
That's just what I give my wife. Forrest, we're going to miss out on something good for
her. I've been working on those in Alexandria, Louisiana, at the USDA lab out there.
Well, you have? Yeah. Oh.
We've been working primarily on adhesives.
For binding wood together, you think?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm wondering what your how big lumens you had in the trajectory.
Well,
we haven't got anything like this.
This thing, it's more than 2,000.
I don't know, it should, it might say in the instructions. You can, maybe you can find it while I'm finishing putting this thing away. Might say in their kind of their summary of the.
I was hoping somewhere in the appendix or someplace to make it the specification.
Yeah,
37. Projector type, dimensions, panel resolution is 1024 by 768, which is looking very good.
Doesn't say?
I'll tell you, it's this 150 watt projection lamp.
Did you want to try that out before dinner? Or?
If it's possible, it's just, I'm amazed that.
I've already turned that thing off, so we'll have to wait until it shuts down and then turn it back on again.
Well, I'm amazed that it, you're able to use it at that low an angle. I'm kind of wondering.
I tried it with the video that Ansel Adams wanted to be in.
Oh, I see.
It worked. It was a little better resolution, but the video itself was not a high resolution video, so it.
Oh, sure.
It looked a little better, but not.
You got, oh, move the icon.
It might be in the subtitles.
Well, right. I was thinking if this thing were moved up where you have your laptop.
And the problem is then it's going to.
Is there no way to tilt it? To
well, that's why I've got it tilted already a little bit here.
Really?
Right.
That level? Wow.
But it works. It worked fine though. Let me put the. Let me get this hooked up. Turn it on. If you want to put it over there in the machine.
Well, we're actually going to, are you putting that up?
Yeah.
We're testing a video.
I mean, dinner's
but I have a class here in 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
A class?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Never mind.
It's dinner time, but I guess you
had early dinner.
I ate first lunch, at first dinner, right.
Are you going to need the screen down?
No, I don't. Well, actually, I need it up. That's.